tree. Kevin Barry gave his young life for the cause of liberty. Only a lad of 18 summers, yet there's no one can deny that he went to death that morning, proudly held his head up high. Shoot me like an Irish soldier, do not hang me like a dog, for I fought for Ireland's freedom on that dark September morn. All around that little bakery where we fought from hand to hand, shoot me like an Irish soldier, for I fought to free our land. Just before he faced the hangman in his lonely prison cell, British soldiers tortured Barry just because he would not tell all the names of his companions, other things they wished to know. Turn informer and we'll free you. Proudly Barry answered no. Another martyr for old Ireland, another murder for the crown. Well, they can kill the Irish, but they can't keep their spirits down.
Not like
Oh boy, there is a consolation ever since the emancipation down among the negro population in the good old state of Alabama.
Many a Gregorian slash and blow on the conch of him who tries to trip. or on one who aims a blow below the belt? Well, the only retort to a boo is a bat.
They may rail at this life from the hour I began it. I found it a life full of kindness and bliss. But until they can show me some happier planet, more social and kind, I'll content me with this. That song was written by the Irish playwright Sean O'Casey for the use of a character in one of his later plays, Purple Dust, a four-man stonemason named O'Killigan. O'Hare, says the author, had a pretty rough life, giving him a great deal of confidence in himself and read widely, strengthening that confidence. Now, it may be that O'Killigan sings for O'Casey, who had a pretty rough life and read widely and had a great deal of confidence in himself. A confidence that spilled onto the pages he wrote and lasted him 85 years of life. In late days, there were hours that dared that confidence to endure. When the gaunt, spare Dubliner died on September the 18th in 1964, he left behind him a wife much younger, a daughter barely grown, and one son, where there had lately been two. The last hours of that boy, Neil, filled one of his father's final essays. Under a greenwood tree he died.
No doctor in this world could save him.
It was just a question of time, and a short time too. His mother holding the boy's free hand until the restlessness ceased, till the boy grew drowsy, and the finely formed hand no longer sought a contact with hers.
I've been thinking, and Christmas or no, I believe we dared bother him with presents just now. He knows the danger he runs, but he's very brave.
Today, the 3rd of January, Neil's body was cremated. Oh, the plans I made, the thoughts I had to try to live a few more years at least. Then I could lead the way for the family into darkness after a long, rugged, and exciting journey. A natural scheme for the oldest mind to fashion. But death cut down the vigorous young sapling and left the old gnarled tree standing. Left the old gnarled withering tree standing.
Rarely did he write of himself as himself by name. But grief and loss brought him closer than ever to the page, like something winged brought low by an exhausted flame. When Sean O'Casey died, he left but £1,500, only that in hand for 11 full-length plays, 12 shorter ones, 6 volumes of autobiography, a handful of essays, very few stories and some songs, and a name familiar enough in general mind to be confused with a whole load of other Irish-sounding ones. It was Sean O'Casey, born in Dublin as John Casey, and altered in nationalistic fervour to the Gaelic Sean O'Cottasey, then later half-retrieved into knowledgeable English as Sean O'Casey, the playwright. And if three names weren't enough, in the autobiographies he calls himself Johnny Cassidy. Always remembering. Remembering his first day at school so long before. His eyes, half blind and always threatening, had even then been diseased and painful.
Come along then, John. You might as well be at school as to be at home, boring your eyes out, looking at the pictures in the books your poor father left behind him. Besides, your poor father would be unhappy in heaven, thinking of his little boy growing up to be nothing but a dunce.
welcome to the bright little new scholar the rector told me about.
Oh, don't be afraid of the boy.
What? It's not such a terrible thing, is it?
Johnny is a delicate boy and must be treated gently because of his poor eyes.
Oh, we chastise the boys only when it's necessary. Now, get off with you, my good woman, and give thanks to God that your boy will be where he can share and what will be for his own good.
The teacher had said that the rector told him about Johnny Cassidy. Now, this tells us that Johnny Cassidy, Sean O'Casey, was a Protestant, which wasn't very rare in Belfast, perhaps, but in North Dublin they were virtually extinct. An outsider, frequently with a soiled, patchy bandage over his bad eye and a squint against the sun in his good one, he somehow grew to manhood, working as a newspaper sorter, a dock worker, a hod carrier, stone breaker on the roads, whatever was to be had in a time when there was little to be had. In 1920, labourer Sean O'Casey, then wanting to be called Sean O'Connessy, lived in a house in Mountjoy Street with a friend, Michael Mullen. He shared one room, a room that found its way onto the Abbey Theatre stage on the ninth night of April in 1923. In the first play that O'Casey had put on, The Shadow of a Gunman. When Donald Davern and his friend speak about the loathsome futility of war, they weren't mouthing iambic pentameter about an ancient combat. They were speaking the plain truth about a Dublin war just a few years gone. And there were people in the Abbey audience who still felt the throb of wounds incurred in Henry Street and O'Connor Street.
Very quiet though now. I wonder what time it is.
The village cock had thrice done salutation to the morn.
Shakespeare, Richard the Third, Act 5, Scene 3. peaceful the heavens look now with the moon in the middle. Wouldn't think there were men prowling about trying to shoot each other. I don't know how any man works. Shot anyone can sleep in peace at night.
Well, there's plenty of men can't sleep in peace at night now, unless they know that they have shot somebody.
Well, I wish to God it was over. The country's gone mad. Instead of counting their beads, they're counting their bullets. Their Father Nosters and Hail Marys have turned into bursting bombs. Bursting bombs and the rattle of machine guns. Petrol is their holy water. Their masses are burning buildings. But De Profundis is the soldier's song. Their creed is, I believe, in the gun almighty maker of heaven and earth. And all for the glory of God and the honor of Ireland.
I remember the time when you yourself believed in nothing but the gun.
Aye, when there wasn't a gun in the country. I have a different opinion now that there's nothing but guns in the country. It's the civilians who suffer. When there's an ambush, they don't know where to run. A bullet in the back to save the British Empire, shot in the rest to save the soul of Ireland. Oh, I believe that Ireland should be free and that the English have no right to be here, but I draw the line when the gunmen are blowing about dying for the people, when it's the people who are dying for the gunmen. Oh, with all due respect to the gunmen, I don't want them to die for me.
Not likely. You object to any one of them deliberately dying for you, for fear that one of these days you might accidentally die for one of them.
It was a lumpy dish to lay before a people lately gone through a civil war. But digested they did, and they begged for more. The more he gave them took the form of Juno and the Peacock, and he put into it all the feeling he had for the basic nobility of Irish womanhood. Something of his own mother, long dead, and something of the Roman Catholic neighbours that he had. Juno Boyle became all Dublin women, trying to hold a family together in the face of poverty, disease, and civil war, and not much help from a husband Captain Jack Boyle, the strutting peacock of the title, that least seaworthy of all unseafaring dreamers.
Yeah, we'll pull ourselves together again when I'm working for a few weeks. Howdy. Foreman of the job is an old buddy of Joxer's. I've an idea, I know myself. It's an A-number-1 shovel gang job. Say, there's a button missing off the back of me moleskin trousers. Now, if you'll just leave out a needle and a thread, I'll sew it on myself. Thanks be to God, the pain in me legs is gone anyhow.
Look here, Mr. Jackie Boyle. Them yarns won't go down with Juno. I know you and Joxer daily of an hour late, and if you think you're able to come it over me with them fairy tales, you're in the wrong shop. Butty of Joxer's. Oh, you'll do a lot of good so long as you continue to be a butty of Joxer's. Shovel. And then, me boy, you'll do far more work with a knife and a fork than ever you'll do with a shovel. Was there a genuine job going, you would be further away about, unable to lift your arms for the pain in your legs. Your poor wife slaving to keep the bit in your mouth, and you gallivanting about all the day like a peacock.
A man would be better off dead. Better off dead.
Everybody calling you captain. And you only once on the water in an old collier from here to Liverpool. But anyone to listen or to look at you would take you for a second Christopher Columbus.
Are you never going to give us any rest?
Well, you're never tired of looking for a rest.
Do you want to drive me out of the house?
It'd be easier to drive you out of the house than to drive you into a job. Sit down and take your breakfast. It might be the last one you're going to get, but I don't know where the next one is going to come from.
Yeah, well, if I get the job, we'll be all right.
Woman, to Sean O'Casey, never lost her dignity and strength, be she mother or whore, patriot or street urchin. And more he lets her speak her mind, which is, of course, his mind. In the other play that he wrote about religion and sex, Bedtime Story, the subject is sex and religion, and the scene is the sitting room of a bachelor flat in a boarding house. John Joe Mulligan lives there. Angela Nightingale does not.
I can't find it anywhere else here.
What?
It's going to 4 in the morning, Angela.
Did you get the lipstick?
No, I told you I can't see it anywhere.
Oh, have another look there, the dear. I know he has it out there somewhere.
Oh, it's not exactly a tropical climate out here, you know.
It's easy to light the fire, isn't it?
Oh, no, I can't light the fire. Oh, the meter needs another shilling.
Look at me handbag somewhere at the bed. Maybe there's a bob in it.
You're not going to sleep again, are you?
What time is it?
That friend of mine I told you about will be back any minute from his all-night dance before you stir yourself if you don't hurry.
And what if he is? Sure, if you knew what's been going on here all night, you'd be sorry he never went to the dance.
Look, Angela, I don't see anything for you. We should never have done it. Please, face the situation. Remember your promise to slip away when things were quiet.
And you like the dark because your days are evil or what? Switch on the lights, God's sake, man. Let's have a look at each other before you banish your poor Eve from her Mulligan paradise.
No, I'd be afraid anyone would see it or hear our voices and begin to wonder.
Oh, there's what?
At hearing a girl's voice in my room at this hour of the night or morning.
And isn't it a sweet thing to hear a girl's voice in a man's room at this hour of the night or morning?
No. You know it isn't. Situated as we are, you know you did wrong to practice on a body that didn't know enough. Situated as we are, without divine warrant, it's not proper. We're in the midst of a violent sin, and you should be ashamed and sorry instead of feeling sinfully gay about it.
Oh, you were pretty gay when you were coming in, boy, now, weren't you? Ah, sure, you've had your few bright moments. You've given a sparkle to your life, but don't spoil it, huh? Come on, John. I'll come back when the room's warmer.
make myself ready to meet the respectable world.
Oh, that one will be well punished for her gaiety and carelessness and sin.
Oh, will I ever forget the night's doings? Shattering fall. The very next day after me, Novena, too. Oh, God, is she gone to bed again? Please, please, Miss Nightingale, have some regard for
others. Please, please.
A bright slap in the face, that, for the Dublin Irish. Sex, religion in the one blow. However, it was a blow they never really had to endure, for it was a late play, bedtime story, written many years after he had exiled himself to life in England. But here is a harsh truth about death for a good cause. From the second O'Casey success at the Abbey, Juno on the Paycock again. But this time, the woman speaking for O'Casey is not Juno Boyle, but a neighbour, Mrs. Tancred. She is on her way to Mercer's Hospital to identify the body of her dead son, slain in a fight for Irish freedom.
Sad journey we're on, but God is good and the Republicans won't obviously be down.
What good is that to me now? Whether they're up or they're down, it won't bring me, darling boy, from the grave.
Still, and he died a noble death. We'll give him a burial like a king.
And I'll go on living like a pauper. Oh, what's the pains I suffered bringing him into the world to carry him to his cradle? Though the pain...